Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kendall Roden, Cynthia Krang, Kale Teeter, Evan Vasilik, Russell Young, and Sajid DeMello discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please visit our website at azpodcast.com.
Well, welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 289, being recorded on the 24th of July, 2019, with special guest Eugene Chuvrov. I'm Sajid, and on Skype with me, on Teams with me, I keep saying Skype, and Teams with me, we have Kale, and of course our special guest Eugene, who we're going to get to in just a minute. But before that, Kale's got some updates that he wants to talk about. Kale?
Yeah, sure. So last week, relatively public that there was an event going on in Las Vegas. The Inspire event was one of the big ones that we have at Microsoft, which has a lot of our partners there. And as a result of that, there's some news trickling out about different things. And specifically, one I wanted to call out is one of the big data platforms that Azure is pretty close to its heart is Azure Cosmos DB. And so there's a multi-part blog post out here from the program manager talking about Cosmos DB from a cloud scale perspective and about how things are handled, like real-time security, in conjunction with this really elastic global database. And basically, it's a really nice kind of write-up about how things are handled there from a threat protection and security standpoint. So I'd encourage our listeners to take a look at that because Cosmos got a lot of power, but also understanding all these intricacies of how the advanced threat protection in Azure is able to be leveraged and used in conjunction with something so large as this data platform. I think it's pretty awesome.
Who's the author on that?
It looks like Parol Matham, and I'm sorry if I butchered the name.
I was going to say it's not Andrew, right? We've had him on the show a couple of times, Andrew Liu.
Andrew, yeah, he continues to be a great proponent for Cosmos DB, but yeah, this was a different different PM. Yep. And then couple other things. One other one that kind of struck my eye was we have a lot of services as usual, like the ever-growing catalog of things that are happening in Azure. And one of the things that it actually stuck out to me too was, the question of the post was, what's the difference between Azure Monitor and Azure Service Health? And it's a good thing, right? So the folks from the product group have kind of walked through where the assessment is, where the alert setting is, where the review is happening, and how to leverage both of these tools for their strengths, because there's different capabilities with each one of those in order to give you either telemetry insights or provide you some sort of mechanism that allows you to get real-time updates, whether it be SMS, mobile, or something like that. So I thought that was really cool because they do kind of sound alike, but obviously they have different areas that they're targeting.
And this is something that I wish Evan was here. He'd be very close to that, right? Especially the service health side. I know he's had some of his team members come on and talk about it. I think it's something that they run out of his organization.
Exactly. Yeah. I think, the big question there is like when something seems off, when you're doing stuff in Azure, is it me or is it Azure? That's like the 10,000 foot view. And then these tools are giving you the insights to know, if there is something that's degrading performance or something like that, where is it? Is it something that I can take action on, or is it something I should be calling Evan about?
Yep.
And then last piece, just to hit on it again, because we're really close time. I think we're 8 days out here now from TruffleCon. We mentioned it in the last podcast. But again, we have to talk about blockchain in every one of these Azure podcasts. And so this is the blockchain segment, but TruffleCon, great partner with Truffle. And we're going to have them on campus August 2nd through the 4th. Super cheap. I think it's $100 entries, the tickets and things to get in. So it's not a lot of money if you're in the Redmond area on that weekend. Definitely come out. We'll all be there. Good to see our listeners. So take a look at it.
Awesome. Yeah. There's lots of goodness in the blockchain space coming up. Great. That's a good roundup. Anything else that's top of mind, Kale, before we get to our guests?
No, this is good. Let's carry on with our guest.
All right. Well, so Eugene, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today. You know, Eugene's a colleague of mine, and he's in my team, and I think he and Kale used to be in the same team as well at some point, so seemed like one big happy family here. Eugene, please go ahead and introduce yourself to our listeners. Let us know what you're passionate about in the Azure space, and we'll take it from there.
Well, thanks, Ajit. Thanks for inviting me, guys, to the podcast. And as you mentioned, I am on the same team as you, which is commercial software engineering, where we work with partners like HashiCorp to actually enable them in Azure. And I've been with Microsoft for about 3.5 years now. And when I first joined, Kale and I were on the same team. And for a little while there, I was doing some blockchain stuff with Kale. So that was an exciting, awesome time. I think we were together at the first or second consensus in New York City, Kale. So that was really a very thrilling experience. So yeah, it feels like a one big reunion at this point.
Nice one. Yeah. And I know we've had HashiCorp in the past on the podcast. I think we had Megan on at some point quite a while ago. So I'm glad you can kind of give us an update on HashiCorp and what they've been doing since the past few years and where they're focused on. So why don't you go and give us a high level as to where they've been so far.
So I think Megan was on your show about two and a half years ago. And at that time, that's when I started working with HashiCorp. I've been working with them for about 2.5 or 3 years. And during those 3 years, we focused on several products that HashiCorp offers. So the most familiar product to your listeners will probably be Terraform. Terraform is a tool, is an open source tool used for provisioning infrastructure into multiple clouds. And Azure is certainly being one of them. So 2.5, 3 years ago, the support for Azure resources inside Terraform was fairly sparse. And then right around that time, we entered into a partnership agreement with HashiCorp, where we had engineers on their side helping our engineers and some of our actually CSC or commercial software engineering guys basically helping us write code for Terraform provider. And certainly the community support was critical in ramping up the Terraform provider for Azure effort. It's right now 2.5, 3 years later. I think it's fair to say that although let's say Terraform provider support is not 100% of Azure resources, for the majority of the workloads, including some of the highest throughput and just very heavy workloads that we're seeing in Azure, Terraform is a very viable tool, and we see a lot of customers adopting that.
So what is the use case for using something like Terraform versus just say plain old ARM templates? You know, it's a naive question there.
Yeah, certainly, definitely not a naive question. I think many times we have to stop and check, sort of like kind of try to reason from first principles, so to speak, right? Why should we use Terraform over ARM or other, even maybe SDKs available to us? And initially, I think at least over the last 2 years, we've seen a lot of customers adopting as a multi-cloud tool of choice. So let's say customers had already existing infrastructure in some of our competitor clouds, so they were coming to Azure, they wanted to standardize on the same tool. So Terraform was that tool. The DevOps guys love it. I mean, I love it now as well. But you know, over time, I feel personally, I have evolved to kind of realize that it's really all about user experience, at least from my perspective. So if you think about it, you basically, in Terraform, you have an executable. So it's a Terraform executable available across different platforms for obviously Windows, Mac OS, Linux. So you have an executable that kind of stands between you and the infrastructure in the cloud. And so you can put certain logic in that executable file to actually enable the user experience that perhaps is not available otherwise. So things like planning the infrastructure before actually provisioning. So Terraform has that. So Terraform plan command allows you to see what infrastructure will be deployed into the cloud before you actually deploy that.
Oh, like a dry run kind of thing.
Right, so the dry run kind of thing. And also, I would also say the syntax, I guess the language Terraform
validation.
Uses. Validation. Yeah, the syntax validation, absolutely. But also the syntax, the language itself that Terraform uses called HCL or HashiCorp language. It's much more readable than JSON. So kind of looking at your infrastructure as code files, so to speak, or Terraform files, you are instantly able to see kind of what infrastructure will be provisioned, what properties it will have, and just sort of have that instant bird's eye view, of your infrastructure. So I think that's the three reasons probably customers are choosing to go with Terraform. So it's multi-cloud, it's great user experience, and the syntax that is perhaps more readable than the alternatives out there.
That's good. So okay, so now they've been. I know Terraform's not the only thing that HashiCorp has. Obviously, it's the one that they're most widely known for. I know in many of my customers, we've used HashiVault as well, which I think is a popular product that they have. How does that tie into all of this?
Yeah, certainly. So HashiCorp Vault is basically a secret management solution from HashiCorp. And if you see the kind of the deck the HashiCorp uses for the line of products, it basically starts with a provisioning the infrastructure. That's where Terraform comes in. So and then after provisioning, or after deploying the infrastructure, you have to secure it. And so that's where the Vault comes in. So sort of like, let's think about deployment of standard infrastructure pieces into the cloud. Certainly just infrastructure by itself, it would not be of much value there. It has to actually provide some business applications, and business applications usually means storage of secret information. And so to be able to dynamically access those secrets, again, in a multi-cloud environment, sort of like that's like the key defining element here. So the solutions that function across the clouds to actually be able to secure the information in the cloud using in a very, very scalable manner using HashiCorp Vault. That's what a lot of customers gravitate towards. And the reasoning also being certainly it's the multi-cloud option of running Vault and also the scalability features that it offers.
Cool.
Yeah, and I just chime in there from the blockchain angle. This is where worlds kind of collide a little bit. Just recently, one of our partners, Pantheon, has been working on some things that are using HashiCorp Vault, as well as our traditional Azure Key Vault. So it's kind of a great play to see. You can do multi-cloud. You can do the stuff that's native to Azure, all those things with the same kind of interface. So that's real. I mean, like it's beyond just like some service to store secrets. Like we're using it as part of our entire blockchain ecosystem right now.
Well, I didn't even know about the Kale. That's great feedback. In a true kind of reunion fashion, the worlds do collide, and perhaps we'll get a chance to work together again.
Yeah, for sure.
And so beyond secrets, then, what else does HashiCorp do?
Yeah, so, it's interesting, actually kind of a good segue into the event that just happened probably just a couple of weeks ago. I was at HashiConf.eu in Amsterdam. All the keynotes are available online. They're free to watch on YouTube, on HashiCorp's YouTube channel. But if you look at the keynotes, you will see that a lot of focus that HashiCorp is currently placing on is on their other product. The other product called Consul. It's Consul. And that product initially emerged as a basic service discovery tool. So basically, let's say you have a microservices-based architecture running in the cloud or in a data center somewhere. Those services need a way to talk to each other. How do they discover each other? And that's where Consul kind of came in. It's also a very scalable multi-cloud solution available as both open source and enterprise versions. So, but then if you follow the HashiCorp's announcements over the last 12 months or so, you will realize how this specific product, Consul, has emerged from a service discovery mechanism to basically a service mesh or a full-blown service mesh solution. And so the service mesh, I guess it could be a fairly overloaded term. In many ways, I guess to many people probably perhaps mean different things. But in a nutshell, now that you can define traffic patterns between microservices and secure that traffic using software-based solution in the form of console. So think about kind of a back to the original HashiCorp kind of a deck I'm kind of envisioning in my brain again. So first we provision infrastructure using Terraform, then we secure it using Vault, and then comes the next piece. We have to connect all the pieces together, which is basically networking, and the networking defined via the product called Console, which is a full-blown service mesh solution.
That's cool. So this is like, you know, quite a portfolio of products they have. And I know that, you know, the Terraform piece, and I think even the Console piece in the early days, it was open source. Well, they're all open source, but there are free versions available, as you say. So at what point, like, should people consider, you know, maybe upgrading to the commercial version? Like, what is the impetus for doing that? Is it primarily support, or are there other benefits for going the commercial route?
Support, that's a great question, Sujit. Support is certainly a great feature of enterprise products to consider. But beyond support, this product offers collaboration features that are not available in the open source versions. So, for example, if you kind of got the open source version of Terraform, it's an executable sort of that you kind of work with from the command line. A lot of customers, especially a lot of enterprise customers, require features that allow them to collaborate on their code, in this case, infrastructure as code, in a team environment. And so that's where the enterprise SKU would come in and would allow people to visualize basically their infrastructure, would allow it to be versioned, and just kind of allow you would be able to deploy the infrastructure using GUI and such. So think about collaboration beyond just kind of like a single team member or maybe kind of like a very handful of team members. So if you're a small company, maybe just like a one-person shop, I mean, certainly open source solution is more than sufficient for you. But if you are if you're a team of people, and as that team grows, the collaboration features, including some of the enterprise features that are offered beyond the basic open source tooling in those products, kind of become important.
So this is like Git, like using Git collaboration or something like that? What do you mean by collaboration?
Yeah, so collaboration in terms of think about you have an interface that everybody kind of logs onto, and they just they're able to work on the pieces of information or pieces of code that they kind of that they are tasked with, and then they're able to check it in, and you're able to visually track the history of those check-ins. You're able to visually plan and apply commands from Terraform. So, and then all of this is backed up by the shared storage of both state files and, I guess, the infrastructure and the code files as well. So, and this is kind of a lot of this is managed by HashiCorp. So think about just really kind of an enterprise-grade environment for collaboration with backed up by solutions that are basically really set up for this collaboration.
So it's like a SaaS solution of some sort that they offer?
It is a SaaS solution, yeah.
Okay. That's great. That's really nice. So what else does HashiCorp have in store? Like, I don't know, whatever you could reveal publicly,
absolutely.
Of course. And anything you can say about the future partnership with Microsoft?
Yeah, absolutely. So if I can just go ahead and drill into some of the things that we have announced at the last HashiConf in San Francisco. That was probably about 9 months ago, and we have another one coming up here in less than 2 months. We actually have a session there. It's going to be in Seattle this time around. But you know, it's all of this information is public. But we focus, a lot of our focus over the last 2 or 3 years when it comes to Azure and HashiCorp has been on Terraform. So we want to make sure that our customers are able to use Terraform and use it successfully. So to that regard, I'm sure a lot of people know, but some may not be aware that we have Terraform directly integrated into Azure Cloud Shell. So the Azure Cloud Shell.
Oh, nice. So the TF utility and whatnot is already there.
Yep. So you can just launch Cloud Shell and type in Terraform, and you'll see a list of commands available to you right away. So, but that's been there for a while. That's probably been there for almost 2 years at this point. So what we did over the last, or actually probably 9 months ago, is there is a lot of people probably are aware that there's also a Visual Code, or I should say Monaco integration in Azure Cloud Shell as well, where you can just kind of launch Cloud Shell and type in code and then period, and then it will launch this window that kind of looks like Visual Studio Code. I mean, yeah. But it's really kind of like a Monaco web-based editor. So in addition to kind of being able to work with your Terraform infrastructure in Cloud Shell using Monaco, you also have syntax highlighting there that was introduced, that we introduced about 9 months ago. So you can see if you save your Terraform files as .tf, it automatically recognizes that extension. It automatically offers resource highlighting and just color coding and syntax checking for you, all inside the browser, all inside Cloud Shell. So that was just kind of like a nice to have thing.
Nice.
That we hope that offers our customers initial experience using Terraform. So for somebody who may not have used it before, a very good, very easy onboarding experience is to actually go into Cloud Shell and just launch Terraform from there. That way you don't have to set up all the credentials, you don't have to download any binaries, all of this stuff has already been set up for you, and you can get a taste of this user experience piece that I was talking about. So additionally, on the Terraform side, we are continuously increasing the coverage of resources in Azure. So at this point, the infrastructure as service resources are hopefully mostly supported. I think there are probably maybe some edge cases, and the best way to actually, if you encounter some edge cases, the best way to interact around those is via the GitHub repo, the Terraform Azure RM provider GitHub repo. So, but yeah, we're continuously increasing our coverage of resources. That work is ongoing. Then we released Terraform Provider for Azure Stack. So right now it's a separate provider. So you can actually use Terraform to provision your Azure Stack infrastructure. One thing that's kind of important to note, and a lot of your listeners already may know about that, but there is a common Terraform modules repository. So if you go to registry.terraform.io, you will see a list of modules that some of them have been developed internally by our team. There's a lot of community contribution as well. But that gives you a nice, perhaps a starting point for getting the basic units of your infrastructure deployed. For example, if you click on Azure, you will see modules for networking, modules for virtual machines, modules for scale sets, the AKS module that you can really deploy using three or four lines of Terraform code by basically pointing to that registry repository. And then another thing that I kind of just... talking about the future of Terraform before I go on to other products here. The Terraform provider, I think we're just on version 1.28 at this point. We are releasing version 2.0, perhaps in a few months. So 2.0 will introduce a set of new features. So there will be the virtual machines provisioning process will be broken down between Windows and Linux. So those will become separate resources, just one example. There will be custom timeouts that you would be able to specify on a per resource basis. So again, all this information is in public GitHub repo. I guess the big thing there is to keep in mind is if you are using Terraform today, just to read up on Terraform changes coming in Terraform Azure Provider 2.0. to see how you could potentially plan for it. And so
I wanted to get your, feedback on how long would it take an average administrator, someone who's familiar with ARM, let's say, how many days is it going to take for them to get onto Terraform? Like, how difficult is it? Just look at an average. I know you're an expert in all this, but what is your expectation that the amount of time would take for somebody to say, yeah, I can now switch to Terraform completely?
Well, you know, I think, Sujit, we have, I have a very good example of that working with some of my teammates. And if any of them are listening, they'll probably know exactly who you are. So some of the teammates, they were using ARM exclusively almost, and just kind of through a virtue of kind of a multi-cloud collaboration scenarios. For example, the recent Oracle announcement. Oracle partnership announcement. I think you had our guys on the podcast last week.
Robert was on last week, yeah.
Yeah, so all of that work was done using Terraform. I don't know if he shared that or not. So, for example, kind of when you have this scenario where you literally have multiple clouds involved, and on the Oracle side, they prefer to use Terraform, and on our side, we're very comfortable using Terraform. So you kind of go where... You try to address the customer needs and demands. So on that specific project, I had a chance to work with some of the guys and girls. And I through the firsthand experience, I can tell you, I think within 3 days, people are very comfortable going with Terraform. And I think they appreciate that this error checking or validation or just the experience that this binary provides directly to you. I think that's probably the aspect they appreciated the most. I think down the road, probably other things or other aspects of Terraform will be also become kind of important. But yeah, I think to answer your question, I don't really think it will take a long time at all. I think 3 days to a week is probably more than reasonable.
That's fair. Thank you. And so you were talking about some of the other updates that might be coming forward with some of the other products.
Right. So just one final note on Terraform. So Terraform follows this plugin architecture where you have this Terraform core, which is really kind of the engine driving the validation and just basic communication with cloud providers. But then you have plugins, and Terraform Provider for Azure is one of such plugins that are loaded on demand to just make sure that the infrastructure is being provisioned is Azure specific. So the reason I'm saying this is because Terraform Azure Provider is going up to version 2.0, and that's going to happen in the next few months. So those are some of the changes I already mentioned. But Terraform Core is actually at a version 0.12 right now. So you can still see we're on 0. releases, but the 0.12 introduced many new features that you would kind of expect in a modern programming language, so to speak. So if somebody's starting with 0.12, I think it's important to note that syntax used by 0.12 is simplified and much more streamlined than before. So, and the feedback from customers we've been getting that they're very happy with Terraform 0.12. There was some compatibility issues. Anytime you make a major change like this one, some potential compatibility issues that arise between prior versions and 0.12. But as sort of like a really one guidance I was offering so far is just we have a set of examples in Terraform Azure Provider repo. I have checked those examples. I'm not 100% checked, so please don't hold me to that. But a good number of them I spot checked to make sure that they're Terraform 0.12 compliant. So potentially, if you are a customer on a version of Terraform prior to 0.12, check out the resources that we already have out there that have been basically converted or we made sure that they're conformed to the 0.12 syntax and features. Check them out in our repo, see how we did things, and hopefully you will find the answers for your own migration paths there. And certainly, I guess this upgrade being a major one, there is a Terraform 0.12 upgrade command you can also utilize. All this information is also public. I think the main point I also wanted to make there, Sujit, is so Terraform Core is also evolving to become more powerful than it used to be using the constructs that probably a lot of software developers expect in the standard programming language. So that's nice. closing out on Terraform right now.
Very nice. Thank you. Yeah. Let's move on to some of the other updates that you can expect from the other products.
Yeah, and so I guess I will be a lot more brief on the other products because, as I mentioned, our main focus over the last 2 or 3 years has been on Terraform. But we are now expanding to include things things like Bolt and console. So let's talk about console, actually, because as I mentioned, this is this has been a heavy focus on that product. There has been a heavy focus on that product from the HashiCorp side. So at KubeCon, which was in May, KubeCon Barcelona, we announced the Service Mesh Interface Initiative, and we as Microsoft. So on that initiative, we partner up with some of the key service mesh providers, and HashiCorp with their console product being one of them. So if you think about basically service mesh solutions today, I mean, they're basically, they can be difficult to configure, can be difficult to maintain and such, but certainly they are becoming critical parts of infrastructure, specifically in containerized environments such as AKS. So with Service Mesh Interface announcement that we've made, we basically said, here's the specification that we would like the Service Mesh products to conform to. And the specification should really cover three main things. You know, we should be able to apply traffic policy between the services deployed in Kubernetes environments. So things like identity, encryption across services, they should be applied in the standard environment. So, and then the second tenet of service mesh interface is telemetry. So in a standard way or standard fashion, we should service mesh offerings should offer capture of key metrics like error rate or latency between the services. And then finally, traffic management, where you can shift and weight traffic between different services. So if you're deploying a new version of the service, let's say you want to kind of route 20% of traffic to the new version with 80% going to still the older version just to test things out. So things like that. So those three things should be covered by Service Mesh Interface. And at KubeCon, we had a demo, and we actually did a podcast with HashiCorp guys where we talked about that in depth. So the demo that allows you to, via Service Mesh Interface specification, to actually apply traffic policy between services using console. So if anybody is interested, this information is available online, including the code pieces to make that work. But in
can that be applied to AKS yet, or is that yet
to come? No, absolutely. So actually, in the demo that we did in the podcast, we kind of deployed it in stages. So the first, we provisioned the AKS cluster. So, and then after provisioning the AKS cluster, this is an important point too as well. If you wanted to deploy console service mesh on top of AKS or just on top of, I guess, any other Kubernetes solution out there, you console has a Helm chart that you're able to deploy, and it configures things for you. And the advantage of console compared to potentially some of the other service meshes out there is that if it has evolved from its roots as a service discovery mechanism, which allows us to basically talk between Kubernetes clusters and actually kind of the other infrastructure pieces such as VMs. So the console agents enable this communication between those services. So back to the demo. So again, the first step was deployment of AKS. Second step, deployment of console via the Helm chart. And then the third step was actually configuring this traffic policy using the standard service mesh interface specification in console. So basically where we automatically kind of specify that the traffic should be encrypted between the services, and then console automatically kind of just ensured that the endpoints, there's mutual TLS connection that's established, and the certificates, I guess, would be rotated automatically for the services there. So yeah, it's a pretty nice. Powerful. Yeah, it's a very powerful stuff, and you know, you will hear a lot more about this, actually at HashiConf Seattle coming up here on September 9th, which is less than 2 months away, right? So yeah, so that's kind of console. That's our most recent partnership announcement together. So we as Microsoft kind of collaborated with HashiCorp to ensure that the console product is SMI compliant, and we're going to continue developing the features together. So yeah, that's great. That's probably one thing. Go ahead.
No, I'm saying that's a really good, you know, the way that I like the way that you explained console with those three steps, the three use cases, and how it fits into AKS. I think that's really good. I think, and I know I've, you know, I'm pretty heavy on the AKS side, and a lot of my customers that use AKS want to know more about service meshes. It's good that console has, you know, like a robust offering that they can have, like a commercially backed offering that they can provide.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, just to kind of, I think I've spoke probably enough already, Sujit, but basically to close off on some on the Vault end as well, is the announcements that we made a few months ago really revolve as enabling direct interface between Azure and Vault. And the two integrations that come to mind are basically the Azure Auth method, where you have the managed identity or managed service identity from Azure talking directly to Vault. So that has been enabled for virtual machines and I guess VMSS at this point. And so we need to make sure that it works across other services as well. And also the Azure Secrets method, where kind of the dynamic generation of credentials or service principles in Azure to access secrets in Vault via this engine that we have developed together with HashiCorp. So kind of think, if you think about Vault as being a multi-cloud solution, it still works better for our customers if we have some direct and native integrations between our cloud and the HashiCorp product. And that's what we've seen over the last few months, and we're going to continue iterating on those efforts.
That's nice. Yeah, I remember seeing a demo about the AAD integration, right? I guess in the back end, it connects with AAD to create those service principles and whatnot.
Yep.
So, yeah, that's really nice. No, this is great, Eugene. I appreciate you taking the time to explain all this. I know you're very close to HashiCorp, and so you're the right person who can provide both sides of the story from the HashiCorp perspective as well as from the Microsoft perspective. So I want to thank you again for coming on and sharing your views on this. So if there's any links and resources, I know you mentioned a few on the show, just send them over to me. We'll put them along with the recording for this podcast, and so that our listeners can have that ready.
No, thanks, Sujit. This was great. And I'm really hoping I'll run into some of your listeners at HashiConf or maybe some other events like Ignite in November.
Sounds good. Thanks again, Eugene.
Thank you. Bye.
Take care.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle at Azure Podcast. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.